Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent. And what are we going to do about our aging transportation infrastructure? Do we just rebuild it as is? Do we re-envision building on what we've learned? The Wisconsin Department of Transportation has started the planning process for Interstate 794 in downtown Milwaukee. And the DOT is reportedly looking at all options from simply rebuilding to removing the ramps and redesigning the whole corridor. What do you use for transportation in Milwaukee? And how do you see this debate playing into the future transportation options in your neighborhood? What if the overpasses were to just disappear? Join us, 1-800-642-1234. That phone number again, 800-642-1234. Email available anytime, ideas@WPR.org. Our guest is Greg May, Transportation Policy Director for 1000 Friends of Wisconsin. And Greg, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Lee. Thanks for the opportunity. Excited to be with you today.
Yeah, your organization, Rethink 794, has campaign is calling for dismantling portions of the interstate highway between 6th Street and the Lakefront Interchange, basically right past the Marquette Interchange all the way to the water. Why are you demolished? Why would you want to demolish this portion of the highway?
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's been an exciting campaign we launched at the beginning of the year after we learned the DOT was proposing a $300 million replacement for just a portion of this highway. And we posted that online and it just exploded. You know, there was a lot of local interest by people saying, you know, maybe we should be thinking differently about this. You know, look what happened to the Park East in Milwaukee. We took that highway down. We got the Bucks Arena. And so we've just seen a lot of local excitement. And we're just starting this conversation, you know, speaking with people all across the spectrum about, you know, what could this look like? And as we, you know, we vision the next 50 years in Milwaukee, what do we want to see?
And as you conducted this study, you said that there would be about $1.5 billion in new property values by dismantling the stretch of highway. How does removing that highway and that overpass 794 in Milwaukee past the Marquette Interchange add $1.5 billion in new property values?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we looked at all of the public land that's underneath this highway, and there's actually 32 and a half acres of public land that's open for development. And so, you know, if we were to, you know, kind of, there's a ton of construction happening in this area. It's a really thriving and vibrant area between the downtown and the Third Ward. It's actually the sixth fastest growing census tract in the entire state. So people want to be here and there's a lot of room for development. So if we kind of continued the construction that's already happening in downtown Milwaukee, it could lead to about $1.5 billion in new investment, which would strengthen the tax base as well for those 32 acres.
Just imagining here, Greg May, that there may be somebody on the interstate this morning listening to this, stuck in traffic, thinking, man, if you got rid of the ramps and you got rid of the overpass, I'm not sure where I would be going this morning as they sit there going nowhere. So what would you say to those who say it's congested enough already as it is? Removing these ramps wouldn't do any favors.
Sure. You know, I'm not unsympathetic to that. And you know, this proposal may add a minute or two to people's commutes, but every piece of infrastructure has positives and negatives. A downtown highway can move a lot of cars very quickly through an area, but is that what we want for our downtown spaces, just to be able to move cars quickly? You know, an at-grade boulevard can handle a lot of cars, but it would also open up, again, as you mentioned, 32 acres of public land for development. It would better connect these two marquee neighborhoods, create better walking and biking infrastructure, reduce air and noise pollution, strengthen the tax base, and it's also fiscally responsible. The Park East was taken down for about $80 million in today's dollars. So that's a lot cheaper than the $300 million they're suggesting to replace it. So, you know, everything comes with a trade-off, and we think it's a no-brainer once you add up all the positives that would come from a boulevard.
We're talking about highway redevelopment and community-based transportation with Greg May, Transportation Director for 1000 Friends of Wisconsin, and we invite you to the conversation because it's one that every community is going to have at some point or other. 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We're Jack and Madison standing by. Jack, good morning. You're on the air with Greg May from 1000 Friends of Wisconsin.
Hi, good morning. I had a couple of thoughts about transit here. You know, that for us in Wisconsin, you know, whenever we drive down to Illinois, it seems like we have to shell out a bit of money just to use their roads. And I feel like, you know, say what you will about tollways in general, but it does seem like an interesting and useful way to pay for roads, and, you know, since it's a common good, and since that's money that goes back to Wisconsin taxpayers, I feel like if we were to implement a tollway system, especially like between Madison and Milwaukee, or like just general kind of connecting that Chicago Twin Cities corridor along I-94, I-90, that would be a good way to bolster our transit infrastructure. And so, yeah, that's one idea that we're floating. And then, of course, you know, I heard your guest talk about, you know, making, like, looking for alternative sources of transit to cars. So, like, if we're able to make things more pedestrian and bike friendly, but also if more people are able to rely on public transit and, you know, hopefully commuter rail, like between Madison and Milwaukee, I think that would also be a great way for people to get around and, you know, not be as reliant on their cars.
Jack, I appreciate it very much. And when you look at the Rethink 794, Greg May, what role do bikes and pedestrians play in your vision of the future of downtown Milwaukee there?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is one of the few places, you know, in Wisconsin where you can live without a car. There's, you know, plenty of amenities and things. So we've actually spoken with some walking and biking advocates, as well as some local neighborhood members who are just really excited about, you know, they walk to work every day. They think this would make their trips, you know, easier. And we hope just by, you know, maybe making it a little bit easier to walk or bike, maybe a few less people would use their car every day. And so that would address some of the earlier traffic questions.
And what does what role would mass transit play in the transportation redesign or rethinking of 794 as you see it, Greg May?
Sure. You know, I should reiterate at this point that the goal of our campaign is just to get the city to commit to a boulevard study, kind of, you know, getting to, you know, out into the community to kind of answer these questions, you know, looking at the traffic questions, where does transit figure in there? We're hoping to just have a broader conversation about this with the public and get the city involved as well. And so those kind of questions around on transit, which I think would be a central component of this as well, would come out of that study.
Well, and I do have a question about, because it mentioned that the Department of Transportation says repairing the 794 stretch as is, just rebuilding it as it stands right now, would cost about $300 million and take about 3 years. What about the Rethink 794 proposal? Do we put a price tag on that? Do we have a timeline on that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's probably a similar timeline, working hand in hand with the DOT. And, you know, we've done some preliminary cost estimates, like was mentioned, the Park East, which is a highway that was taken down, it's of a similar distance, was taken down for about $80 million in today's dollars. So we're expecting maybe something a little bit higher, but something certainly substantially less than $300 million.
And Greg, you alluded to this earlier about how 794 removing the ramps of 794 and bringing it down to a boulevard could bring together two different districts of Milwaukee. And how could you explain for those who might not see it or you know, driven through it, how the downtown and Third Ward are divided by 794?
Sure. Yeah, this is a highway that kind of cleaves through downtown. When these highways were originally constructed, they were incredibly destructive to, you know, Milwaukee County. They took about 6,000 homes were destroyed to build highways in Milwaukee County alone. 20,000 people were displaced to build them. And these neighborhoods were destroyed by this. And so there were a lot of people who had lived in the Third Ward and in downtown, and they're starting to come back now. We're seeing that area grow. But this highway kind of runs for several blocks right in between them, making these kind of big overpasses you have to walk under. They're dark, they're dingy, they're not engaging. And so, you know, if anyone's been downtown and had to walk between the Third Ward and downtown, they you know, are familiar with this experience.
Milwaukee Business Journal reports local community and business leaders are supporting the proposal to demolish the downtown portion of the highway. So how do local interests contrast with the objectives of the state, Greg, or do they?
Yeah, there was a really excellent piece written recently by Jonah Chester in Wisconsin Watch, kind of talking about the bureaucracy that happens at WISDOT and how they're kind of constantly in conflict with local communities and their designs. And so the DOT owns a lot of these highways and has the final say on what ends up happening with them. And that can run counter to the goals of local communities. And, you know, we can see that on roads like East Washington in Madison or Fond du Lac Avenue in Milwaukee that are really dangerous roads that are really focused on throughput. And so, you know, we're hoping that the DOT has said they're going to look at a boulevard alternative for this highway. And we're hoping to kind of make sure it gets its fair shot, that it's not just something that's kind of considered and thrown away, but that it's something that they really engage with the idea. And we hope that you know, there's new federal money that can be used for this as well. We're seeing cities around the country look at re-examined highways, places like Minneapolis and Detroit. So we're hoping the DOT considers that as well, because there's certainly a changing attitude at the federal level as well.
We're talking about the future of highways and transportation with Greg May, Transportation Policy Director for 1000 Friends of Wisconsin. And we invite you to join in with your questions or thoughts about your community and what the future of transportation should look like where you are this morning and where you need to get to go at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest is making a case for dismantling part of the interstate in Milwaukee, from the Marquette Interchange to the lake. Can you find a roadway where you live and see where more walkers and more bikes may be a benefit? Are there places where cars are being squeezed out and you feel like it's been a detriment? Join us, 1-800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Our guest, Greg May, is a transportation policy director for 1000 Friends of Wisconsin, and their Rethink 794 campaign for downtown Milwaukee is making a case for removing the overpasses and the ramps and bringing a boulevard back down to the street level in downtown Milwaukee. What do you think? And Greg, I want to ask you about, since you're the transportation policy director for 1000 Friends of Wisconsin, about the burgeoning electric car infrastructure in Wisconsin and how you see that developing.
Sure. There was a lot of exciting stuff that came out of the infrastructure bill and the Inflation Reduction Act regarding electric vehicles, and we're starting to see it take hold. There's certainly a lot of funding. I think something to the tune of $80 million in funding for charging stations that Wisconsin's going to be seeing. And the DOT is doing a lot of planning around central corridors. But it's kind of it's a small industry right now. It's just growing. There's only about 10,000 EVs registered in Wisconsin. For comparison, there's about 4.3 million gas-powered cars. So they make up a pretty small but growing percentage. And so, you know, we're really excited about EVs in Wisconsin. They're an important solution, but we got to recognize that there's going to, you know, take time. And, you know, we got to be making sure our transportation system is flexible and balanced and has options for folks beyond driving.
Yeah, I do see charging stations going up around my area is in Madison. So I do identify the infrastructure. But does this just in some way reiterate or reemphasize our priority of being of our cars, that we choose to be in our cars? We like these isolated little shells that we get to pop in the morning so we can have some time for ourselves between family and work. You know what I mean? Is the car culture too strong, too dominant in the United States to, you know, find bike lanes and places for pedestrians?
Yeah, you know, I would agree with that statement. I think what your earlier caller was getting to is that our transportation system's not really working for anybody. We're struggling to maintain our existing roadways, actually. This was highlighted in an excellent 2020 New York Times article by Patricia Cohen. You know, there's just a growing maintenance backlog. We have this exploding amount of money we're spending on highways. We're financing that with debt. We're seeing that with I-94, that highway outside of where Miller Park is. And in Wisconsin, we have no state dedicated funding for walking and biking infrastructure. And we fund transit at a level about 24% less than we did 15 years ago when you adjust for inflation. So our transit systems are having to do less with less.
1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation with Greg May, Transportation Policy Director for 1000 Friends of Wisconsin. Their Rethink 794 campaign for downtown Milwaukee is considering a boulevard as opposed to an overpass. What do you think? We'll turn now to Alvin in Milwaukee, who joins us. Alvin, good morning.
Good morning. So I have a question regarding the Hone Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So if the 794 spur turns into a boulevard, what happens to the Hone Bridge?
Alvin, thank you. Greg?
It's a great question. I literally have a giant bullet point that I'm supposed to say, which is that we're going to keep the Hone Bridge in this proposal, and I missed it. You know, it's a local landmark. It would be, you know, stay connected to this. And the boulevard and the Hone Bridge would meet at the Lakefront Exchange or interchange.
Right. So that's about where your plan for the boulevard would meld back into the traditional right there at the Hone Bridge. I appreciate you mentioning that. And Alvin, thank you so much for bringing it up. It's a big bullet point there that I'm glad we got on the air. And Greg, just in the bigger picture of things, we had a recent caller-only program on the morning show where Jeremy from Racine called in and asked about the current infrastructure for bicycling in the state. And there's a 2017 state law that bans the use of eminent domain for building pedestrian paths and bike lanes. How does this change affect local development around the state, if at all?
Yeah, it's made a huge difference. And there's actually a really interesting stat I learned recently from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, which is that they consider about 31% of Wisconsin to be non-drivers. That's about 1.8 million Wisconsinites.
Wow.
And this includes everybody under the age of 16, aging adults, low-income individuals, people with disabilities, and those who prefer not to drive. So there's an enormous population in Wisconsin that could benefit from walking and biking infrastructure. And unfortunately, we have had some laws that have changed recently that have made it more difficult for our local jurisdictions to build more walking and biking infrastructure. Those two things are the repeal of the Complete Streets Law that happened in 2015. And then obviously, as you just mentioned, the 2017 removal of eminent domain to build walking and biking paths. So if the city, if your community is planning to build a bike path or a sidewalk and a single property owner holds out, it can really disrupt the process. And we've heard from communities across Wisconsin that this is stopped or outright halted, biking and walking infrastructure in their communities.
Greg May, where are you seeing major developments in bike and pedestrian infrastructure across our state?
Well, you know, we're still seeing a lot of really great growth. I actually see a lot of it up north. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of family that lives in northern Wisconsin, and they talk about these great new bike paths that have been built. I know it's been a boon for tourism in northern Wisconsin as well. And so there's a lot of great work being done up there to kind of connect communities. And we see it in rural areas as well, which is important because, you know, the percentage of non-drivers is actually higher in some rural counties in Wisconsin than it is in cities. I think people overlook that. And that'll be important, especially as Wisconsin continues to age.
Greg May, Transportation Director for 1000 Friends of Wisconsin, and still time to get your question in about the future of transportation across our state at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dave and Thomas standing by. Dave, you're on the air with Greg May.
Yeah, hi. I think what we've got is a rare opportunity here to start rebuilding our cities, which is what we're going to have to do if we want to save this planet. I think Lincoln Park, Illinois, is a good example of an area where people live, recreate, and work in the same area without the cars and use mass transit when they have to go somewhere else. And I think this is something that we can do and show that we're a leader and show the rest of the country what we can do to start getting rid of cars, quit building roads. We need a moratorium on new roads. And getting rid of this one is a rare opportunity that we've got to set an example for the rest of the country and hopefully for the world.
Dave, thank you so much. What more can we do, Greg May, to set a better example for how transportation can be done in the 21st century?
Sure. You know, I think he's really getting at a point which, you know, we reiterated 1000 Friends of Wisconsin, which is that we should be fixing all of our roads that we have now that exist before we're expanding more roads, you know, really addressing our, we have an enormous backlog of repairs that need to be happening. And rather than addressing them, we're spending a lot of money on new roads, just adding to that backlog. So I think being more thoughtful about our transportation policy, trying to, you know, spend it in a way that looks as forward looking, that's sustainable. Because, you know, transportation is the largest contributor to climate change in the United States. And a big majority of that, about 60%, comes from individual cars. So, you know, anyway, as we look forward and we are starting to address climate change, you know, any way that we can kind of provide flexibility to the system, provide folks more options, we think is a good policy.
Greg, 1000 Friends of Wisconsin's receiving a grant from Wisconsin COWS to improve pedestrian and bicycle access in areas throughout Wisconsin. Monona, Stevens Point, Wisconsin Rapids, where are you hoping to expand this project next?
Yeah, we, my colleague Susan runs an excellent program called Active Wisconsin. Recommend folks check out the website activewisconsin.com, and you know, we're just working with a coalition of communities around Wisconsin that are interested in improving their walking and biking infrastructure, so we're happy to have any community that's interested join in.
Well, I would think that would just about be all of us, Greg May, and I thank you so much for joining us this morning. Very much appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Just want to tell folks to get involved with the 794 Project. Visit our website, rethink794.com, and just be engaged in the process. There's going to be a lot of decisions that are going to be happening over the next year, and we just hope to get folks engaged.
Certainly will be interesting to watch, and thank you so much for joining us. Greg May, Transportation Policy Director of 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin. And if you'd like to join our conversation coming up next, we'll be taking a look at the new professional soccer club that is coming to Milwaukee. But it's more than just soccer, and it's more than just a team, and it's an entirely new entertainment district. You want to talk about it? 1-800-642-1234 to join our conversation with the COO of the new Milwaukee Pro Soccer team. That's after the news. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn and for Kate Archer Kent. And it's not just that Milwaukee will be the home of a new professional soccer team. No, the new team brings with it the promise of a whole new entertainment district on Michigan Street between 6th and 10th at the Marquette Interchange. While the Bucks have the Deer District, the Iron District is set to be the future home of Milwaukee Pro Soccer. If you have questions about the future pro soccer team and its new home, join us at 1-800-642-1234. Like, what's the name of that new Milwaukee pro soccer team? I'm glad you asked. You can also email your questions, ideas@WPR.org. Connor Kaloya is a chief operating officer for the new Milwaukee pro soccer team. He is also the COO for the Forward Madison Football Club. Connor, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So why Milwaukee? You get a new pro soccer team and it lands in Milwaukee. What's the case for Wisconsin's biggest city?
Yeah, well, Milwaukee has a great soccer heritage. You know, if you go back to the 1950s and 60s, it was one of the top five soccer cities in the U.S. And if you look at the growth of outdoor spectator soccer over the last 10 years, we've gone from around 50 teams in the U.S., 50 professional teams to over 110. And so there's been rapid growth in the last 10 years. If you look at major metro markets across the U.S., Milwaukee's one of the largest cities in the country without professional soccer. And we're excited to be the ones to bring professional soccer to Milwaukee. You know, there's a robust youth soccer scene. There's a ton of soccer supporters. And we just think it's a great market, a great community to bring pro soccer to. It's a little known fact, but Milwaukee has actually had a soccer supporters group, supporters being those diehard fans in soccer that are waving scarves and lighting off smoke bombs. And Milwaukee has had a supporters group, the Milwaukee Barons, since 2014. And the Barons were formed with this goal of bringing pro soccer to Milwaukee. And here we are, it'll be about 11 years later that the pro soccer will finally come to Milwaukee. So we think it's a great market and are excited to bring pro soccer to the people of Milwaukee.
And Connor, where does this new Milwaukee pro soccer team fit in the echelon of the soccer leagues? Where is this team going to play? What league?
Yeah, it'll be in the USL Championship. So everything in American soccer, every league, every team, even coaches and referees, are all licensed or sanctioned through the U.S. Soccer Federation. Major League Soccer, which has, 29 teams now across the U.S., that's the top division of professional soccer in America. USL Championship, the league that the Milwaukee franchise will be in, is the second tier of professional soccer in the United States. There's 27 markets across the U.S., mainly markets of 1 million-plus people like Phoenix and Louisville and Las Vegas and Sacramento. It'll be a national league, and Milwaukee will slot into that league. Our team in Madison, Forward Madison, that we currently operate, they play in the third division, and there's 12 teams in that third division across the U.S., smaller markets of about 500,000 people to about 750,000 people.
And Connor Kaloya, when will the new Milwaukee soccer team be dropping the ball? When do they start?
Kickoff will be spring of 2025, so April of 2025. we announced the project last week. And now we're in the process of stadium design and the overall development at the Iron District. And we plan to be on the pitch in the spring of 2025.
Connor Kaloya, Chief Operating Officer for the new Milwaukee Pro Soccer Team. And this team's 8,000-seat stadium is part of the new Iron District Sports and Entertainment Complex near downtown Southern Edge. Why did you build your stadium in this part of Milwaukee, Connor?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we've been on our pursuit of a pro team in Milwaukee for nearly 5 years. And you can't have a sports franchise without a stadium. It all starts with the stadium. I mean, the things you need to have a successful sports franchise, you need a stadium and you need, you know, a population base. Well, Milwaukee has the population base, but we had to locate a parcel that would be good for a stadium. And our development partner on the project, Bear Development, and our team have been probably looked at about 50 different sites in the city of Milwaukee and in the surrounding area. And ultimately, we identified this site at 6th and Michigan, bordering the Marquette interchange that we just thought was the ideal place to locate a stadium. And if you've watched the growth of pro soccer over the last 10 years, some stadiums have been located kind of out in the suburbs, other and more kind of downtown areas. And the most successful teams in pro soccer are those teams that play downtown. And while we did consider suburban locations, we thought that we really needed an urban location to kind of target the younger demographic and the fans that we're looking to draw. So after looking at, like I said, about 50 different sites, we located this site. We purchased the site from Marquette University, and they were great to work with throughout the process. And this stadium at the Iron District will be the home of Marquette's men's and women's soccer and lacrosse teams, in addition to hosting professional soccer.
Yeah, but it's more than just this 8,000-seat stadium, just kind of like the Deer District's more than just the Fiserv Arena. What else will be or is planned for this new Iron District, Connor?
Yeah, the catalyst, Lee, the catalyst is everything's built around soccer. The catalyst is a professional soccer stadium, 8,000-seat stadium, but that's just one part of the development. It'll be attached to a 140-key hotel room. We plan to have a 3,500-person concert venue. And then construction housing will start in the next 45 days. And there will be 99 multifamily residential housing units on site, in addition to several retail pieces that will interconnect with the stadium. So it'll be a fully developed space. There's two parcels that are separated by James Lovell, and all of our development to start will be on the western parcel. And then we'll plan to have future development on that eastern parcel.
Talking about pro soccer development with Connor Kaloya, Chief Operating Officer for the incoming, upcoming Milwaukee Pro Soccer Team, as well as the Forward Madison Football Club. And what is that name of the new Milwaukee Pro Soccer Team, Connor?
Well, Lee, that's up for the people to decide.
Are you sure about that? Is this something you thought through?
No, well... for better or worse, I've done this a few times before, I think we're going to let the people guide us. If it goes off the rails, we might have to have another discussion with the people, but soccer is different than other sports. And, what our goal and what we're trying to do here is build a community around this club. And, I think the biggest mistake, I've been fortunate to own some minor league and, amateur pro sports franchises across the state. And I think the biggest mistake an owner can make in pro sports, especially lower division sports, is to pick the name, pick the team colors, pick the logo. It's not the owner's team. This is the community's team. And we're sincere about that. So we've started a name the team contest. You can go to MilwaukeeProSoccer.com. We've already had over 2,000 submissions in less than a week. And we want the community to name the team. We want them to pick our colors. We want them to guide us in the kind of logo and icon of developing this brand.
Any favorites off the top of your head? Ones that immediately you think, well, there's no way that's going to be a name, or that you think might be in the running?
You know, Lee, I shouldn't admit this, but I have not even looked. The reason I've not looked is I don't want to – because I want this to be, a democratic and peer process. I don't want to look and find a name I like and get attached to it. And so I'll look later in the process.
Okay.
I know there's been a lot of Cream City.
Uh-huh. Curd City came up too. So if Curd City,
what was that?
Curd City.
Yeah, Curd City.
Yeah.
I think that the thing I love about this process, one, is that there's excitement and energy around the club. Two, people are engaged, and people care from day one. And so, you know, whenever we land on a name, not everybody's going to love it, but I can tell you that when we land on a name, it's going to be something that's voted on and kind of pushed by the fans. And so, like I said, over 2,000 submissions, a lot of creative ones. I think the funny one that's maybe getting some traction is the Milwaukee Talkies. That's one of those where you say, are you sure you want to let the people decide?
Milwaukee Talkies. The other one that I saw was the Milwaukee Packers who can't use their hands.
That's too long to fit on the jersey, I think we'll have to push that one out a little bit. Because we don't have enough real estate. Yeah.
Well, you know what, Connor? Your excitement is obvious, but aren't you a little bit nervous, too? I was thinking back. The Milwaukee Rampage was a pro soccer team, played outdoors until the early 2000s and had some financial difficulties, some attendance challenges. You know, where do you see the pitfalls of bringing a new pro team to Milwaukee?
Well, Lee, I think that's a fair question. This isn't an easy business.
Yeah.
And we've been fortunate to have success and great community support in Madison. But, you know, these are challenging businesses to operate, but we're extremely confident in a handful of things. One, just the way the community has already embraced it, but the way the community support we've had up to this point so far. Two, we think it'll be a great facility that it'll be provide a great fan experience on match day. And really be welcoming to our fans. And I think the third thing that we feel good about is this is going to be, you know, we're not kind of duct taping and zip stripping this project together. I mean, this is going to be a well-funded venture with a lot of local leaders that are serious about pro soccer and are determined to have it succeed. And we've got a group of people that have done this before and have some background in the space and have learned a lot. Have had good times and bad times and have learned a lot in how to operate a team. And so I think we've got a really good recipe when you talk about the facility, the market and the interest, and then the ownership group that's determined to make sure that this is going to be a success. And Milwaukee is an amazing sports town. I mean, you know, Wisconsin's a great sports state, but Milwaukee especially punches above its weight when it comes to sports. And we're excited it's long overdue to have pro soccer back outdoors for the people of the Milwaukee community.
And as you mentioned, Connor, you had fervent supporters and soccer fans before you even had a pro soccer team in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Barons. And it does remind me of the, you know, the Flamingos that I see in Madison supporting the Forward Madison Football Club, of which you're the COO of as well. So we'll take a break here, but when we continue, our guest, Connor Kaloya, is the Chief Operating Officer for the incoming Milwaukee pro soccer team. He is the Chief Operating Officer for the successful Forward Madison Football Club, and taking your questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, about what it's like to run a pro club, what it's like to gain traction, get success, and some potential, I don't know, nicknames for the new pro team coming to Milwaukee. Team colors, you got some ideas? Curd City, Squeaky Curd City Football Club? I'm Lee Rayburn. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and pro soccer is coming back to Milwaukee in 2025. Our guest is Connor Kaloya, Chief Operating Officer for the Forward Madison Football Club and the incoming Milwaukee pro soccer team. And if you'd like to know what it's like to be COO, questions are welcome here at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. And Connor, I guess that is my big question, what it's like to be the Chief Operating Officer for a pro sports organization. What do you do every day?
I think a lot of people wonder that. What do I actually do? But no, it's an honor to lead this team and be one of the founders of this team. You know, my day-to-day role, I'm responsible for all aspects of the organization and the business. So I oversee our sporting and technical side, which is the coaches and the players. But I'm more involved on the business side of things, whether it's working on corporate partnerships, developing our strategy, working with our supporters, meeting with supporters, ticket sales, merchandise. It's an amazing job. It's a wonderful job because every day is different. And as you try and build something, we've been with this project since the start in 2018. It's fun to just constantly be building something and something that people get connected to. What we've tried to do here in Madison and what we will do in Milwaukee is build a community around the club and get people connected to the club and get into the community. And it's just a fun project because one, you hopefully have an impact on the community, but two, you see people attached to the team and attached to the brand, and they're coming out here, spending their hard-earned money and having a great time and enjoying the experience here. And they're excited when the team wins, they're down when the team loses. So we're all in this together. So I've been fortunate to be able to make a career in sports. And it's been a great run in Ford Madison. We love starting things and are excited to get it off the ground in Milwaukee.
Yeah, what are some of the big lessons you take from the Ford Madison Football Club that you will bring with you to Milwaukee, Connor?
I think the biggest lesson is let the community guide you. Yeah. Yes, we're the ownership group and we're the owners, but we're really just kind of the stewards. These teams, hopefully, will long outlive us. They'll hopefully be in this community for tens, maybe hundreds of years, hopefully. And it's our job to build a club that's reflective of the community. And how we've had success in Madison is letting the fans guide us. The fans told us that the name should be Ford Madison rather than being there's a vote. Is it football club or soccer club? The fans decided on football club. For team colors, the fans went with, that light blue that's in the Madison flag. When it got down to designing our actual logo, we had a couple different logos. We had a fiercer flamingo and a more artsy flamingo. The supporters group pushed us to go to that artsy flamingo instead of the fierce flamingo. And really the way we've built this thing from the ground up, and the success of it so far is just been based on listening to the fans. And that's what we've learned. And I would say two things. One, listen to the fans, and two, invest for the long term. I think when we started in Madison, we hadn't been in pro soccer before. We weren't sure it was exactly going to work. And we probably didn't invest in the facility as much as we should have, out of the gates. Those are the two things we've learned and two things we're really focusing on as you look at a new stadium, being built in Milwaukee. It's focus on the facility and let the fans guide you.
Well, you certainly know when it's game day in Madison on East Washington Avenue at Washington Avenue at Bree Stevens Terrace. And one of the aspects of just being, in Madison and seeing the Forward Madison Football Club is the focus on inclusivity, accessibility, how you've made sure that everybody is invited, no one is turned away, and if they want to see the game, participate in the game, cheer for this team, that everybody has a way to get in and be a part of it. And that is something that is, I don't know if it's marketing, Connor, or if it's just the position that the organization took from the outset.
Yeah, it goes back to it being the community's club, right? And I think one of the great things about soccer, I think a lot of generations didn't grow up with soccer, and so they're not familiar with it. And under the age of 35, Americans consume soccer at the same rate that they consume baseball and basketball. And what's great about soccer is it's youthful, it's amazingly diverse. And what we try and create here at our stadiums is a place where everyone is welcome. We're the first soccer club in the world that has a supporters group, supporters groups being those fan groups that are kind of your diehard fans. We're the first soccer club in the world in Madison that has a supporters group dedicated to individuals with disabilities, the Accessamingos. It's an amazing group of gentlemen that have formed this supporters club. We've worked with them to create a better match day environment, a more accessible environment. We work with them on an annual basis to improve accessibility and the experience here. And that's really the environment we want to create, something that everyone can get a chance to participate in. Everyone is welcome, and we come together as a community on a Saturday night to cheer on our local team. And so, one, accessibility is important to us from you know, making sure everybody can get to the stadium. Two, from a ticketing standpoint, while we do rely on ticket revenue, we are very active in the community with local youth groups and nonprofits to make sure there is no barrier to entry to anybody in the community that does want to get in to the stadium. So accessibility is important. This is the community's team, and it's important that we create an atmosphere and an environment that everyone's welcome.
Connor Kaloya, our guest, chief operating officer for the incoming Milwaukee Pro Soccer team, as well as the Forward Madison Football Club. And these clubs are related, right? And will the Forward Madison Football Club be a feeder for the Milwaukee Pro team?
Yeah, so there is a connection. I don't know that it won't be a direct feeder. There'll be okay. Two, we have similar ownership. They will work together from a sporting side, a talent development side of things. But they will be their own teams. And where we see efficiency and benefit to kind of having these two clubs less than 90 minutes apart work together is we recruit talent in Madison at the third division. We have a clear pathway for the players that we recruit to move up to a higher division, and that'll be Milwaukee. And I also think there's some efficiency on the sporting side from a scouting and player recruitment and overall strategy and kind of vision standpoint. We'll kind of have one sporting philosophy and strategy on the soccer side between both teams. So there definitely is some efficiencies and synergies to work together, and excited to put that together down the road in 2025.
And this Milwaukee Pro team will be a feeder for the Major League Soccer across the country then. This will be the next step.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, soccer's a little different than baseball. In baseball, you kind of have a linear path to get to the big leagues, right? You go to rookie ball, A ball, double A, triple A, and you move right up. Soccer's a little different that you know, we've got players that are on their way up and headed to Major League Soccer, or even headed to Europe. We've got other players that maybe had a decent career in Major League Soccer, and now they're playing in the USL Championship in Milwaukee or even in the third division in Madison. So it's a little different from what you see on the baseball side of things. But it'll be the team in Milwaukee will be the highest level of pro soccer in the state. And you'll have a great deal of talent, both talented players that maybe played in Europe or played in the MLS, and other players that are on their way up and on their path to make it there.
I cannot wait to see what the community decides for the incoming Milwaukee Pro Soccer team. Connor Kaloya, thank you so much for inviting us to be a part.
Thanks for your time. Have a great day.
Connor Kaloya, Chief Operating Officer for the Forward Madison Football Club, as well as the incoming Milwaukee Pro Soccer team, set to kick off in 2025. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent today, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.